Not really a fan of what I've heard from Kamaru Usman in the aftermath of his loss to Leon Edwards. The first thing that struck me as odd and distasteful, I guess would be maybe the right word for it, was how he said that the knockout blow was a Hail Mary. And that's just not true. If a fighter does exactly what want them to do, which is what Usman did when Edwards threw the short right feint and then the left jab feint, got Usman moving his head off the center line and delivered the shin to the chin. That's exactly what Edwards wanted Usman to do. And so that's not a Hail Mary, that's a setup. That's the desired effect. That's what he wanted. And a Hail Mary would have been just going out there and brawling and hoping to catch him on the chin with a lucky punch. That didn't happen. That was not a Hail Mary. And so I didn't like that, what I heard there. I also didn't like that what Dana White said, that he and so take that with a grain of salt, since it's a Dana White attributing a quote to Kamaru Usman. I can tell you the weight that's been lifted off me. That's kind of a cop out to make it seem like, well, I didn't really want to win and I feel better now that I'm not the champion. No one feels better that they're not the champion. You can spin that any way you want, but sure, there's pressure. There was pressure because he was a defending champ. There was pressure because he was one win away from tying Anderson Silva's all-time UFC win record. But to say, well, now I feel lighter. I feel like a weight's been lifted. Would you rather have that weight, or would you rather have no title and lose basically $1 million per fight? I'd rather have the weight and the money than feel a little lighter in my soul because I'm no longer the champion. So it just seemed like a little bit of a cop out, a little bit of a I'm not mad kind of deal. But I would have rather heard him say, hey, he was a better man that night. He beat me fair and square. We're gonna have a rematch, and we'll see how things get sorted out then. I didn't hear that. And so I don't, like I said, I don't like what I'm hearing from Usman, but then different folks deal with loss in different ways. Dana White expressed some regret on letting Shane Burgos go, said there were mistakes made that allowed Burgos to sign as a free agent with PFL. And I understand that, but I also think there's a little more going on here that than Dana White wants to let on. And what I think is going on here is that Burgos, who was the number, I think, 14 ranked fighter when he left for free agency for PFL, I think what's going on here is that Burgos now showed other UFC fighters who aren't in the top five, top two, top three, but are still ranked that, hey, the grass might be greener elsewhere. And so if you're in that kind of boat where Shane Burgos is, you fight out your contract and you start talking to other promotions and see they might offer you a lot more money to go over to their side of the fence. And with that, I think with Burgos leaving, moving over to PFL, and from what he's saying, getting a better deal just to fight, not if he wins, but just to fight for PFL than he would have got for the UFC, from the UFC, well, maybe that's something that Dana White wants to avoid, and so he wants to try and get ahead of it. And so maybe the mistake was not locking Burgos up to a deal before his UFC deal expired. But whatever the case, fighters that are closing in on the end of their contracts, fighters who are reaching free agency, they need to explore that free agency. They need to consider what other organizations have to offer. Burgos made the right decision for himself and for his family. And I think the UFC and White might fear here that other fighters might do the same. And I'd expect a lot more pressure from the UFC from fighters to sign a new deal before their old deal expires. I would hope that fighters don't do that. I would hope fighters fight out their deals. Now we know that there's been some nefarious play in the UFC when a fighter doesn't re-sign, but that's just something that the fighters have to deal with and face that this might happen. The UFC might give me a shitty deal, want to fight out my contract. They might give me a tougher fight than I would have gotten had I re-signed. That's just something the fighters are going to have to deal with and accept as a price of business, as a price of going into free agency. I have my suspicions on Paulo Costa's pay claims here that he made $35,000 for the Marvin Vettori fight. And here's why I'm suspicious of that. Because that is close to or more than $100,000 than what he made for his previous fights. So I know he missed weight for that Vettori fight. And I know there was some kind of finagling to get him into that fight. But if he paid a price of $100,000 for that to happen, well, then he should probably think about suing his management, because they shouldn't have accepted that sort of deal to get him into that Vettori fight. And here's why my suspicions are, because these are based on disclosed numbers from the athletic commissions. Costa made 55 and 55 for a total of 110 for his Uriah Hall win. And then he made 60 and 60 for a total of 120 for his Yoel Romero win. And then his next fight is UFC middleweight title fight against Israel Adesanya. That pay was not disclosed. Now, the Hall and the Romero fights were disclosed by the athletic commissions. These are not made up. This is what I think he made numbers from some website. These are athletic commission disclosed payouts. And so, I'm sorry, I just don't believe that $35,000 was what he made for the Vettori fight. I can't fathom that. I can't accept that the UFC would cut him that deal, or that his management would agree to that deal. It's a bad thing if that happened. And like I said, if that's what the case was, then Costa really needs to think about suing his management company, or at the very least leaving that management company and getting someone who is better at negotiating with the UFC, because to take $100,000 or close to $100,000 pay cut, that's unacceptable. Just unacceptable. I hate that there is this whole MMA media thing of reporting on unsubstantiated claims. And this one started, I think, with Daniel Cormier, where he said that he heard that Colby Covington was dealing with bad injuries because of the alleged Jorge Masvidal attack. And that then went to Gilbert Burns saying that he heard from people who train with Covington that Covington was dealing with substantial injuries and that he wasn't going to be able to fight. And now this week we have UFC president Dana White saying, no, neither of those things are true. Covington's fine. They're working on getting him a fight. And so these rumors, they just snowball. And I think, and I don't know if this started with Cormier, but he definitely got things rolling there with saying that he heard, without saying who he heard from, that Covington was dealing with injuries. And then Burns just furthered that by saying he heard from folks that Covington's close to. Well, if you're not telling me who you heard from, I'm going to be suspicious. And I'm not saying that I'm not suspicious of White saying that these things are untrue, because I'm also suspicious of that. But I'm more inclined to believe the UFC in this case. One thing that I do want to say about this Covington thing is that when the UFC said they are working on getting him booked, is that when that booking takes place, I am hoping that that booking is in a state with a strong athletic commission, someone like California, Nevada, or New York, where they'll at least question something. And what I want to see questioned in this case is, Covington said that during the alleged attack from Masvidal that he sustained a brain injury. And so that's a red flag. And that's a red flag that the athletic commission should investigate. And so if there is a athletic commission which has to license Covington to fight, well, then that is, even if that's, well, that's something that really needs to be investigated. That needs to be questioned. Covington needs to be called into that meeting and questioned as to, was that a legit injury? Does he have documentation of that injury? Does he have documentation of that injury being cared for and that a doctor has approved him to fight? And if not, well, then he shouldn't be able to fight. And if this is a state with a weak commission, Texas or Florida, or a location where the UFC itself is the commission, well, I'm not a fan of that. Not a fan of that at all. And I think that when Covington fights, he needs to fight in a place where he's going to answer these questions, and the UFC is going to be forced to also answer these questions. If you're saying you have a serious brain injury because of X, Y, or Z, well, you need to be cleared before you should be allowed to fight. Adding another weight division to the UFC. I'm not a fan of this, but I can see where this would help the UFC. So if the UFC decided they wanted to add a 165-pound division and shuffle some things around, I think that there's a benefit of that for the UFC, because it would allow the promotion to put another shiny thing on a poster. We know a shiny thing on a poster is a prerequisite for a pay-per-view card. So if you can say 165-pound title is going to be decided on this fight card, well, now you opened up another way to get a title on a fight card. And the other good thing about this is it allows fighters to possibly make more money in those title fights, in pay-per-view points, and being a champion in that division. And so, if the UFC ever wanted to add another weight class, it would have health and safety benefits. It would have benefits for that, allowing them to put something shiny on a poster. And it would allow for the fighters to possibly make more money. So, I'm not against it per se, but I'm not really for it either. But if it gets fighters paid, why not? Free speech. Dana White, In the aftermath of this whole Lou Rockhold thing, where Rockhold crapped all over White and the UFC for how they dealt with him in the past and how he was dealt with, and UFC fighter pay and the bonus structure and all that jazz, where Rockhold went pretty hard in on the UFC, White said that who's more free speech than him? And he said this before that, and he's saying it after it. He's saying basically the same thing he's always been saying. No one's more free speech than the UFC. However, actions show otherwise, because Luke Rockhold's Media Day press conference, where he ran on these rants, justified, I might say, against the UFC, against Dana White, that's still not up on the UFC's YouTube page. So White may be all for free speech, but someone at the UFC is definitely not, because Luke Rockhold is not showing up on the UFC's YouTube page. And so White can say this, his actions speak otherwise, and to say that I'm all about free speech and then soft censor him by not putting his Media Day press conference on YouTube, well, your actions are telling me otherwise. Your actions are telling me you won't pull the plug on the guy while he's making that speech, but you're definitely not going to advertise it after the fact. So you might want to revisit your free speech claims there, Dana White. Another thing Dana White said in the wake of this whole Rockhold thing was about insurance, and that fighters are taken care of, and they're taken care of great while they're with the UFC. I don't think that's true, because we know that the fighters don't have health insurance. They have injury insurance. I have a signed fight contract, and I'm going to fight on this day. And any injury I get while I'm in camp, while I'm with this signed contract, or I sustain in the fight itself, is covered by insurance. However, if a fighter is just training, and we know fighters pretty much have to train year-round, if they're training and they're not booked, they do not have insurance. At least that's from the last information that we have available, is that only during fight camps with a contract do fighters have injury insurance. And so that does not include their families. That does not include them getting the flu outside of fight camp or even in fight camp. That's not an injury. That's a health-related insurance claim. And so the UFC can say what they want about taking care of fighters until they give them year-round UFC paid, or maybe not fully paid, but at least covered, partially covered, mostly covered health insurance. They're not really providing a great service. Sure, injury insurance is fantastic. It's an improvement over nothing, but to make it sound like these guys have some kind of great shakes insurance. Not the case. And this is something the MMA media needs to push more and more and more. You don't have health insurance. You have injury insurance. Big difference. Big difference. And that health insurance, they should get health insurance, and their family should be covered under that health insurance, just like most jobs do, or at least provide some level of insurance outside of fight camp. UFC doesn't do that. Like I said, the injury insurance is better than nothing, but it's not fantastic. UFC 279, here's some numbers I do not like when I'm looking at the fight matchup between Nate Diaz and Khamzat Chimaev. Chimaev lands 7.89 significant strikes per minute. That's a lot. That's second to Daniel Rodriguez in UFC history, all-time UFC history. And Chimaev's strikes are powerful. These are not pitter-patter strikes. These are not Nate Diaz strikes. These aren't just keeping you busy, keeping you blocking. These are strikes that do damage. With Diaz being someone who is tough and has ability to absorb damage, and the fact that he cuts easily, that's a lot of strikes that he's going to have to take in this fight if things go as they have been going in Chimaev's fights. So odds are good he's going to get opened up here. Odds are good as he's going to bleed a lot, because that's kind of what Nate Diaz does. The one saving grace here is that he is fighting in Las Vegas, and therefore the cage side doctors have a better knowledge of what they're looking at as far as damage and what constitutes a cut that warrants a fight being stopped. And what constitutes a cut that warrants a fight being stopped is a cut that will do, that will prevent a fighter from being able to see around the eye, or a cut that's more than cosmetic, that is going to do long-term nerve damage. These are the things that stop a fight on cuts, or should stop a fight on cuts. Chimaev is also accurate. He lands 59% of his significant strikes. It puts him all top 10 all-time in UFC history. And so, like with the output, the accuracy is another worry for Nate Diaz. So if he's getting tagged with a lot of powerful strikes and they're accurate, he's going to get damage. He's going to absorb damage. Another number that worries me is the striking differential. Chimaev is at plus 3.59, which puts him top five all-time UFC. Again, that's a concern with Nate Diaz being able to take damage. And this one has come upon us more recently is that the knockdowns. Nate Diaz didn't get knocked down until his eighth UFC fight against Melvin Gallard. He then got knocked down by Marcus Davis two fights later and Benson Henderson six fights after that, I think, if my numbers and timing are correct here. Josh Thompson then knocked him down and knocked him out in the fight after the Henderson outing. That's four knockdowns in his first 22 fights. And then in his past four fights, he's been knocked down five times. Three times by McGregor in UFC 202 and twice by Masvidal at UFC 244. And again, this is a concerning number because we know Nate Diaz can get up from these knockdowns and continue fighting. So I'm a little worried here for Nate Diaz, just because of his ability to take damage, his ability to absorb that damage, keep coming forward, and just being incredibly tough and resilient. The one saving grace we have here is that I'm going to think that Nick Diaz is going to be in Nate's corner for this. And with that, perhaps if the damage gets too bad, if things get too lopsided, Nick will throw in the towel, because we know he has done that before. I think it was the Thompson fight. He threw in the towel at the exact moment the fight got stopped, or another fight, but the towel was coming in as the fight was getting stopped for whatever fight that was, and it was from Nick, because Nick does not want to see his younger brother take unnecessary damage. And I think that's the advantage of having a fighter in the corner, a fighter who is close to you in the corner, is that they're not going to allow you as a fighter to take unnecessary damage and they will stop the fight. I think more fighters should have that mindset. I think Nick Diaz has that mindset because he's been there and done that. And so that's the one thing that I am looking, well, the one positive about this fight, I should say. The positive is that the doctors are going to know what they're looking for in stopping the fight. The positive is that Nick Diaz is going to be in there knowing what he is looking for in stopping the fight. And that's not to say that I think that Nate Diaz is going to get blown out and destroyed. I'm just saying that here are the numbers that make me a little worried about this fight. And so we'll see what happens. I mean, my prediction is going to be Chimaev. I just think he's better right now. Had this fight taken place a few years ago, times were different, scenarios were different. If they matched up at a different time, maybe the outcome would be different. Nate Diaz is a tough guy. He's going to keep coming forward until the fight ends in some way. And so he always has a chance. In this case, I don't think it's a great chance, but he has a chance.